you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are listening to this show, live or on podcast. Again, we are here for another edition of Brother to Brother. Brother to Brother, Coast to Coast, as we call it now. Again, we like to thank everyone for joining us, who continues to stick around and waste a perfectly good hour of your week. Can you hear? All right, can everybody hear me? Can everybody hear me? So, okay, all right. So again, as we always say, for those that would like to participate in it, for those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, again, we are here, your two favorite psychologists. We got Dr. Nate Chapman. I'm Dr. Keelan Hinton, and we have a very, very special guest this evening, and we're gonna have a good time, Mr. Will Chapman. Where today's topic, we'll talk a little bit about identity, a little bit about motivation and entrepreneurship and goal setting, you know, most importantly, because last week we talked about goal setting, so we want to build on what we talked about last week. So we'll talk a little bit about life, identity, entrepreneurship, goal setting, and everything else in between. So hopefully we will all have a good time. And as we always say, and as Dr. Chapman likes to remind us, while a lot of what we do may be therapeutic, tell them, Dr. Chapman, this is not what?
Therapy. We need you to know that for legal reasons, just in case you try to sue, you will get nowhere.
Yeah. So that sounds real bad, like he's trying to cover himself, but we really do love you. We really do love you all. All right. So again, we thank you for joining us, and let's rock and roll. First and foremost, gentlemen, how's everybody doing today? Before we start with what's going on for the week, what's been going on for the week, how you been doing, anything interesting happened to you, you see anything interesting. So what say you, gentlemen, how are you today?
Well, before we start, I also wanted to, I don't think I heard you say the disclaimers, you know, remember?
Oh, yes, that's right.
What we say on here represents our own personal thoughts. It doesn't represent Marshall University, the radio station we're working from. We appreciate their sponsorship. It doesn't represent any of the institutions I work for. These are our own free thoughts, and it includes the guests, his own personal thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know how I forgot that. That's probably the most important thing. Again, we, as Dr. Chapman said, we thank WMUL, we thank Marshall University, but again, it does not support any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors in any way. These are the sole perspectives and ideas of Mr. Will Chapman, Dr. Nate Chapman, and Dr. Keelan and ourselves. Okay? So again, as we always say, take any of this advice at your own risk. All right. All right. Now we can get to it, gentlemen. Anything for the week? How have you been doing? Anything crazy happen? Anything interesting happen? You know I got something before we start.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Nah, my week's been pretty low key. You know, pretty, standard.
Yeah, that's that California weather talking. See people out there, when you live somewhere that's warm, you know, the sun always shines on your face. You don't have problems. You never have regular folk problems. As they say, regular folk problems. You never have regular folk problems. So
that's funny. I mean, I think y'all would appreciate it, y'all, those that are living in the the winter states. We did get to like, I think 50 degrees yesterday, and it was real chilly to me. So I think I'm acclimating.
Oh my God. It didn't get to 50 degrees. We need to send the prayer warriors out for you, don't we? To make sure that you okay. 50 degrees. Dear Lord, whatever shall you do? Mr. Will Chapman, how are you today, sir?
Hey, how about yourself?
Doing well, man. We thank you. We know you're a busy man. We appreciate you joining us, as we always start out with, before we jump into our topic, anything crazy, anything interesting, anything just happened during your week, unusual or just same old, same old?
Pretty much same old, same old. I really just keep my head down and staying forward and try to plant little seeds. So upcoming next year, things will start hopefully prospering, and I can get things going moving forward. But it's pretty much the same thing. I live in I'm out here in Michigan, a little city called Westland. It's probably about 20 minutes away from Detroit. So the weather out here is not 50 degrees, I tell you that.
So I was gonna say, you know exactly what cold weather is all about then. So
yeah, man, it's definitely no sunshine right now.
I feel you. Well, yeah. As for my week, gentlemen, there's always something. And I need to ask you all, have you all seen, before we start, and I'm not going to go deep into it, but I just want to encourage you, if you haven't seen it, have you seen the Tiger Woods documentary yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
No.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. Look, you've got to watch this documentary. Tiger, and they go into his life. They go into his father's life. I didn't know that his father was running around with women while he was taking him to go play golf. It's not a good look, okay? But it gives you some insight into him. Mm-hmm. But as I'm watching this video, as I'm watching the documentary, I think there are two parts out now. And we all know the whole Tiger Woods story. You know, he got caught with all these women, and he had to come out and apologize because that's a whole other show for another day. Why he had to apologize to all of us for cheating on his wife, I have no idea. It seems to me like that was between them, but he had to come out and apologize to us because he cheated on his wife. So we all know the story. And it hit me while I was watching this. It hit me. Because I was wondering, why do people hate Tiger so much? And why did they take such great delight in Tiger being taken down? And it hit me like a ton of bricks while I was watching. And maybe you guys can kind of comment on this for a second or two before we move forward. Did Tiger remind them of somebody that hurt them, used them, abused them, and never got their comeuppance? Is that why we like to see people fall? When they cheat, when they use, when they abuse? Like, why are people so elated? And it's almost like, they didn't catch my husband, they didn't catch my wife, but we take great delight in someone who reminds them of us when they get caught and they get what they deserve. So it makes us feel like there is justice in the world. Even though I didn't get my justice in my situation, there's justice in the world. I wonder how much of that is where those emotions for a lot of people come from. We all have our own trauma and our own pain. And when we see someone else who does it, who has done it, and they get caught, it makes us feel like, that the universe does try to balance stuff out. Maybe it didn't work that well for me, but somebody like mine got caught. It made me think about Springer. Why do we like Jerry Springer so much? Because my life is messed up, but I ain't that messed up. So I don't know. Again, everything makes sense in my head when I think it. I don't know if it makes sense when I say it out loud. So that's why I was wondering if you guys had any opinions on that. Is that why? People were so elated. They were so mad and so elated when he got caught and so into it. It's because, well, one, we feel like he lied to us. He made us feel like he was a good old boy and he wasn't. But two, how much of it is our own trauma and our own pain resurfacing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, whether I think about the Tiger situation or any other situation where somebody's been idolized or put on a pedestal, I think what happens is, even though I think to some degree before that situation happened, there were people that had different feelings about Tiger in terms of his personality, whether he was approachable or not approachable. I did, when I was in the Army, I did like a security guard rotation for the 1999 US Open, because it happened to be in North Carolina. That's where I was at, and he was there. And I remember how unapproachable he was compared to the other golfers during that time. Side note, I actually got Payne Stewart's signature, and he won the US Open that year and happened to die that year.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's, do you still have it?
I still have it. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. But I think what happens is we put people on a pedestal. We lift them up, and it doesn't take too much for people to fall from grace. You know, it's because we put them on a pedestal that maybe they shouldn't be on in the first place. You know, the same thing I think we do with our people in other leadership positions, whether it's a preacher or a teacher or, you know, somebody in some type of political situation that they have leadership in. Like, we put them on that pedestal, and then as soon as they make a mistake, we have them being so amazing and so unflawed that whenever they make a mistake, it's unbelievable. And I think it makes it easier to take it a step further and, oh, they were so deceptive, this, that, and the other. And from that person's perspective, regardless if they did something that we consider right or wrong, they're probably like, you know, I was just living my life. I'm not the one who put myself on a pedestal. You put me on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And so are you mad that I messed up?
Gotcha.
Yeah. I also, I think that our society, the way society is, I think it's, I think we're inundated with with drama. And the problem is, and I think the problem with that is that when you're looking at, when people are like, you see miserable people love to be around miserable people, you know what I mean? Or they like to see other people going through something. I also think that the problem is that this is somebody's life. This isn't a show, you know what I mean? So I think as a society, sometimes we don't know how to compartmentalize, you know, and actually take a step back and be like, oh man, this is someone's life. No, actually this is to us, to some people, this is entertainment. So it's sad, but I mean, it's, but I feel like if you're a public figure, I hate to say it, but sometimes some of the things that you do in your life, it's kind of exposed out there like that. You know? So, I mean, you sign up for it, sign up. I mean, it's what it is.
Yeah, you both make a good point. I wonder if those people don't feel real to us because they're on TV. The same way we see SpongeBob or whatever else on TV, they're on TV, they don't feel real, which I think is a part of the amazing emotional and visceral response people have when they see somebody in person. Like, they cry, they shake, they can't believe it, because these people aren't real to us. So that's interesting. And maybe that's another show for another day that we can all get into, is this notion, idea of how we idolize, you know, how we put people on a pedestal, how we idolize people, how they don't feel real. And then when there is a fall from grace, you know, Will, you make a good point. This notion, idea of how like we lose sight of these are real people with real issues, with real things going on in their lives. And again, like I said, maybe it's a part of the Jerry Springer phenomena. Seeing other people's drama and other people's pain makes me feel a little bit better about my situation. My situation's messed up, but it's not that messed up. So maybe that's a larger part of why we like drama too. I don't know, but again, I didn't want to go on too long about that. You know, maybe we can play another show for that a little bit later. It's something for us to think about. But it, I wondered how much of that reaction was. It was nice for people to see someone finally get theirs, because the person who hurt me didn't get mine. And did it bring up personal drama and trauma that drove or motivated people's responses? You know what I'm saying? So it was interesting. But if you get a chance to watch it, and maybe that's a thing we could do, maybe everybody could try to some kind of way watch it and then come back and give commentary on it. It's interesting, because a part of it that you'll see is that his father would, it really traumatized him knowing that his father was stepping out on his mother. It traumatized him deeply, Like, he knew it was happening as a kid when they would go play golf. They would go play, go to tournaments, and he would leave them in a room and go pick up women and go on dates and all this kind of stuff. And he didn't know what to do about it. It really tore him up. Like, it sort of emotionally and mentally scarred him. So all of those are good things, that stuff that we kind of, you know, Dr. Chapman, stuff that we talk about all the time when we talk about trauma and the effects of trauma, all that stuff that we can get back to a little bit later. But again, you know, everybody's doing well for the week. Let's move on and moving forward, okay? I'll throw it to Dr. Chapman. He'll give a brief introduction of our guest, and he'll open with the questioning when we're rock and roll.
Yeah, let's definitely put that topic on the show, because I think that bit you were getting to about generational trauma and how it can show up over and over again, that would be a good example for us to talk. But today we got our guest, and our guest is Mr. Willis Verdell Chapman. Yes, I did say his whole name because it's my brother.
He called him Willis. He called the whole first name.
And my dad's name is Willis also. So just in case there's any confusion, likes to go by Will, and every once in a while, if I slip up, you'll hear me call him Johnny. It's the same person, so don't get confused, but that's just the inside name, so you know. But this is an entrepreneur. He's been in business now for a number of years, has curbside appeal, lawn maintenance business, also does some snow and some other landscaping features. He'll tell you more about exactly what his business entails. But last week we were talking about goal setting. Me and Dr. Hinton got into like gets in the way of goal setting, a number of different things. And I thought it might be nice. I was having a conversation with Will this weekend. I thought it might be nice just for you guys to hear some of his story and then relate it to this whole idea of goal setting. And just as one entrepreneur speaking to other people that are entrepreneurs or that want to be entrepreneurs, for him just to share his story. So you start out, just tell us your journey from, you know, the employee to the entrepreneur, and wherever you want to start, wherever you want to go with it, and then we'll just, you know, we'll flow off you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say I appreciate both of you guys for having me as a guest on the show. Yeah. Where do I want to start? So, like I said before, I'm located in Michigan, about 20 minutes away from Detroit. So the area that I'm in currently now is Westland. So how can I start it? So I have an automotive background, and basically automotive background. So what that entailed was sales, doing anything with, I did almost every position you could have at a dealership. So that's kind of the background I came from. But along that ride, going through all that, experiencing throughout the years of working for the automotive industry, it definitely played a toll as far as what's going on in the economy. And then a lot of it was also made me have decisions on what I need to do for my future. So of course, you know, when you're out there working, you never really kind of see what the future is. You kind of just head down trying to work and do what you got to do. But along those way, you do end up picking up certain traits. You end up learning certain tools, certain things you can go and apply it to other areas. So my journey is, I worked for automotive for a while, I would say about 15 years. And I basically got to a point, man, where I started in a low position. I was a car porter, just, you know, but I was like 17, 18 or something like that. I just got out of school, whatever. That was one of the first little jobs. And then I worked my way up to doing something like, I was in parts for a little bit, and then floated around doing other little tasks and whatnot. But then, you know, as I got older, I started wanting to get to other things as far as like sales. And I eventually ended up getting into sales for a little bit. I trained under a good guy. He trained me up, and I had a good sales team, sales rep, or he actually trained me up pretty good as well. And but as the time went on, those were brutal hours. I ended up having a child at the time. So those type of hours right there were kind of going against what I need to do as far as my responsibility to my family. So I stopped doing that. And along the line, I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. You know, I've always kept a 9-to-5, and I always wanted to like indulge in other things. I think one of my first businesses I had was a clothing company. It was Pierre Louis, the name of the company. It was me and a couple other gentlemen. And we were pretty successful at it. You know, I'm not saying we blew up or anything like that, but along those lines, I learned a lot from that. And I also had some good mentors, such as one of my uncles, name is Ted. I'm sorry, Uncle Todd, I'm sorry. And he's no longer with us now, but he kind of showed me a lot of what entrepreneurial is, like just the whole steps of what it takes to actually run a company. Actually showed me like a lot of like little things of like just the structure of a business. And once that that business and whatever kind of went under, whatever, I still took those traits and I still started to like do things like as far as designing. I started like just wanted to start doing my own thing. And so I never really got rid of the entrepreneurial spirit. But then going back to working a 9-to-5, that was something I just had to do because, you know, you got to do it. So especially pay the bills, whatever. So after that, I ended up going into sales, getting out of it. And I was just like, man, I when you're working for a 9-to-5 or somebody, you know, it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing. It's all how you look at it, what you take from it. And one of the things that just, kind of just burned me inside was that, not to talk about anybody, anything like that, but just sometimes when you're working with other people, you know, you could have some people that could take you a long way, some people that will mentorship you and just take you and have you going further in life, whatever. But then the flip side of that is you also have certain people where, you know, you kind of like, you're like, man, this is my boss, you know, like, and you kind of don't see the structure of how a business is running, especially if they don't look upon you to actually, they have plans, they don't look for, you know, adopting you to what their idea of what them going to the future is. So, and then, like I said, at that time, I think that was back in 2008. That was when we had the housing crash and everything. So
I got a quick question for you. So I worked at Firestone Tire Company once.
Okay.
It was in the summertime. It was 100. I'm from Memphis, so shout out Black Haven. Everybody know what the heat is like in Memphis. We was working inside of trucks, and we was pulling tires off of a truck. I did that for 8 hours. I made $50 that day. Okay, that was the moment that I said to myself, I remember it vividly. It was 30 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, or whatever it was. I remember it was about maybe 25 years ago. I remember vividly when I said, that was the moment that I said, there's got to be more to life than this. I had worked a lot of jobs before then. I'd worked at Wendy's, I'd done McDonald's, I had done everything. I worked in ASIC shoe store, I had done everything. It was something about working in that hot truck. That was the defining moment that I said to myself, there has to be something more than this. I didn't know where I would end up, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that there had to be something more. Can you remember the moment, and maybe Nate can answer this question too, but to you, can you remember the moment that you said, I got to start my own? Was there ever a moment that you said there has to be something more than this? Or was it just something that was always in you? But it seems like everybody has that defining moment where they go, man, look, this not finna be like this forever. Do you remember where was you? What was you doing? And what happened that made you say that?
Well, that kind of goes back into what I was just finishing up here. My moment was when there was a lot of politics going on. So they were, letting people go left and right, or keeping some people, depending on if you were valuable to them, you know what I mean, and what you could bring to the table. So fortunately, I didn't get let go, but man, it was a gut check to like just seeing like some of my colleagues, good friends of mine, just going, and it dawned on me like, man, I got a family at home, you know, I could have been that guy, you know, like, and if so, then like, what am I gonna do? What else is left out there? All I have is this experience of all these years here, and yet they're closing dealerships down left and right. And I'm just like, oh man. So I started thinking like other options, like, man, there's got to be something out there. I don't want to be that guy that got to let go. And then here I am. I'm just, you know, out in the open and just exposed, you know? So that was like one of the first things. What about you, Nate?
Well, before I go to myself, I want to see if you can comment on this, because I kind of remember, I don't know if it was that moment, but we've had lots of talks about this. A reminder for the listener, just in case you just turning in, you know, tuning in. This is my brother. We grew up together. So I remember we was having a conversation. Probably it had to be probably during the holiday, but we're sitting there. I think we're sitting on your couch downstairs in your lower level. And you basically just said to me, man, like, nah, man, I can't do this anymore, man. Like, I need to have something for myself. I can't be going there and, you know, having this boss determine, no, I don't, nah, nope, that's not for me no more. Yeah. I don't remember exactly when that was, but I do remember the conversation because I remember the energy that was coming off that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was like you had like a bulldog determination in that moment. And that bulldog determination was fed by whatever was going on at the job that time. I don't remember what it was, but it was like enough for you to be like, nah, I gotta do something else. And it's got, whatever I do can't be going back to somebody being my boss.
Yeah, see that whole mentality, that was, that brought about because of, like I said, the whole politics. Man, I was having managers and bosses that was like dictating of what I could make, how much money I can bring home. And I just got tired of it. And I was like, you know what, man? I'm like, there's got to be something better in life, man. Someone else telling me what I got to do. And basically dictating my life. You know what I mean? And man, that hit me to the core, man. So that's what I started, like, literally, we had that conversation. Yeah. It was a surreal moment for me. But I sat on that idea and those thoughts for, I want to say, a year or two before I actually started making a move and started planning and started doing things. But
why?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Why?
Well, because of the unknown. It was like, you know, it's like you seen a bunch of people jumping in the pool, and then here you are, you're scared to get in the pool, and you're just like, and someone's like, just put your one foot in, you know, and it's like, you take your time, but then eventually, you know, you put your one foot in, and eventually you're like, oh, okay. Then you create the courage enough to be able to, like, you know what, I'm going to step my own way, take that dive.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did, you know. So what I did was, I said, I got to get into something that's going to, it's going to be low entry. So then I'll have to put a lot of investment into it, a lot of money into. So, that's where I kind of came up with, I started a company called, Curb Appeal. And, from that point I was like, and actually I didn't even have a name for it. I was just kind of like, I just want to go out here and see if I'm going to like what I'm going to do. So I'm like, I went to a couple of neighbors and I'm like, hey, let me try this. Can I cut your lawn? And you don't got to pay. Just let me see if I'm going to like it. I'll see how it's going to look, if I got skills to do it. And I did it, and I ended up, you know, doing pretty successful with it. And eventually a year went by, and I incorporated the business and everything and got everything going. And then vividly, I remember, I hate to say this, but I remember vividly at this point, because this is right when I put my 2 weeks at my job. And this kind of goes back to jumping in the pool. So I was nervous. I put my 2 weeks on the day of Trump's inauguration.
Wow. That's probably a whole nother show for another day.
Man, yeah, that was like, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I never really even went back and thought about this. But now that I remember, yeah, I ended up putting my 2 weeks in. And that 2 weeks became, like, I think, like a month, actually. But I was setting myself up to be able to go out there. I saved some money on the side. It wasn't a lot, maybe like, you know, maybe $4,000 or $5,000 or something like that. Just put to the side just so I could get this thing going. And I had some other guys that was doing it, watched a lot of YouTube. There's a lot of educational channels on guys starting up, you know, in that industry. So I took notes, studied on it for about those 2 years. Once that time came and I put my 2 weeks in, I was really comfortable. Like, you know what, this is,
that was my question. What was your feeling after you turned in your notice? How did you feel? Did you feel a weight relieved? Did you get a little bit more stressed out? Did the fear kick in? Did the anxiety kick in, or what?
It didn't kick in because I wasn't really anxiety or anything, because I also was doing I was also running the business part time while I was working full time. So I was making more money part time than I was actually working full time. Okay. And I was doing it in a short amount of period. I was doing it on the weekends, which is, you know, I get my Saturday, Sunday, but I was making what I was making more than what I was making in 5 days. So it was just like, it dawned on me, like, you know what, this is going to be it. You know, I can see the light. So when I told my boss and I let everybody know, you know, everybody thanked me, you know, congratulated me and thanked me, and, you know, went on my merry way. But I do remember the day I the day I cleaned out my my desk and everything, and I was leaving and everything, and I do remember leaving the parking lot, driving off, like, this is the last time I'll be here. And I said, I'm not gonna look back. And I said, this is it. This is me jumping in the pool. And
I got two follow-up questions for you. I'm gonna just give you one at a time. No.
Sure.
First one, I kind of remember this when it happened. Can you just tell the viewers, what was the reaction you were getting from your peers that you were working with as you told them what you were doing?
I could say that, like, as far as the people I was working with, you know, a couple of them, they had a lot of people, like, they like to give their insight and things. So what are you going to do when you leave? When are you going to do this? And a couple of people I did share some things with, whatever. And, you know, I did get a good response back. You know, no one really was negative, really. But, you know, you get a lot of people that, like, you know, that think they know what's going on, you know, or they know how to run a business or whatever. So, and some of them don't, but it's okay, you know. But no, I got nothing but good responses, but I didn't really get too many pushback or anything like that. As far as family and everybody was supportive.
Well, and then the other question is, so you had that period of time where you were working part-time after you were working full-time and you were making more money. Mm-hmm. Did you go through any struggle when you started doing the part-time with actually cutting the rope? Like, were you going through a process of, oh, I'm actually making more money now? Did that, was there the struggle there, or how'd that go?
No, not really. I said, once I started, I hate to say, once that money hit my hands, and I was like, oh man, like, this is actually something I can actually kind of do, and I can go move forward. I was green light. I was going, and anything after that, I was just like, hey, take these blinders off, and I'm gonna keep moving forward. I'm gonna do the best I can. If I fail, then I fail. And luckily, I had a boss and I had good management. They're like, hey man, things don't work out. You know, you can always come back. And so I knew I had that as, like, I knew that I can come back. The problem is, I just didn't want to come back. It's like, I had enough of the rat race, 9 to 5, but I wanted to kind of, you know, wanted to do something better for my family and better for myself as well.
Yeah, no, I asked that because I think a lot of times people, the reason they might partially pull the trigger, but then they get some type of safety net, like in that situation where, okay, I'm going to go part-time. Mm-hmm. Then part-time becomes comfortable. And then they're like, I'm not really going to go. So for you to have the courage to go ahead and take that step and not stay stuck in that zone is something. Now, early on, once you started, you were out there doing your thing. What were some of the struggles you faced early on?
I got to be honest. Some of the struggles. So in my automotive background, one of the things I did get into was sales. And basically what I had to do is I had to get out there and sell some jobs. And one of the things, I wasn't super successful at sales, but at the same time, I knew that overcoming different strategies, you know, dealing with different personalities and different people, hey, you know, that was probably one of the, I'm gonna say it was a challenging part of it, but it was definitely like, okay, I'm out here in the world. I gotta meet new faces. I gotta get in front of people. I gotta sell myself, not just sell myself, but I gotta also sell the product that I'm gonna, you know, that I'm gonna perform for them. And that could have been bad, you know, but but based on my sales experience and everything like that, I was comfortable enough to get in front of people. Basing it, you know, and I kind of feel like I'm a people person anyway. So I just went out there and was just like, hey, you know, yeah. So I would say that was a little bit of a struggle, but but I can say my background actually kind of helped it out a little bit.
I got a question. I don't know if this is too personal, but you said you had a family at home.
Yeah.
So was the family at home like, mm-hmm. go for it? Was they like, we need this bread, make sure you know what you're doing? Or
So that time, I'm gonna interrupt. I left my job and my daughter was like, just not just born. I'm gonna say she was maybe like a year or two old.
That has to be scary.
Yeah. And I was like, but you gotta understand, the environment that was going on at the time. Like just in Michigan, they were shutting down, like we had over like 40,000 dealerships. They were shutting down dealerships. Like, I mean, we were down to like something like, I don't know, 15, 20,000, whatever. So they were shutting down dealerships like crazy. And then I don't know if you guys remember, Obama came out and Biden, they came out and then they kind of bailed out the auto industry. So that right there was, that was scary to me. Not necessarily starting a business, because to me, I was like, I already knew, and I kind of went out there and test the waters a little bit. I was like, okay, this could work, but I wanted to create a fail safe. So, and that's kind of what I did. I was like, if this goes down under, then I can know I can depend on myself, and I can bet on myself to go ahead and make this happen. So.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, how important is it? You know, how important was your crew at home in supporting you? You know what I mean? Like, it helps.
Okay, so my wife at the time, she was supportive about it, and she was like, hey, go ahead and go do it, you know, I got your back, you know, I really appreciate that. So that was like, you know, she didn't give me any flat bag or anything like that. She worked as well, so she was very aware of what was going on as far as like the dynamics of running a business and me letting me go out there and do what I got to do. Because she knew, I mean, of course, when you start a business, it's going to take long hours some days, you know. And she was there with me, and you know, she supported me. And then as far as my mother and father and the rest of my peers and my brothers, you know, they supported me too. They also came out and helped me out, do a little bit of tasks and stuff like that. So, I mean, it wasn't nothing. As far as my peers and everybody was, I got to be honest, everybody was pretty cool about it. You know, they didn't get too much flatback.
Yeah, and I think another thing that really, from observation pieces, was helpful is your core family. I mean, in terms of income, right? You know, your wife was working, she had decent income to help out with that struggle. I think that makes it easier for entrepreneurs when they have, you know, some system. It's not just the support. You need the support. It would have been hard if she would have been like, no, don't take risks. Because some people are married to somebody who's risk averse. But also, if there was financial stuff in to help with that, that would have been another struggle.
Yeah. No, I've seen there's other guys in my industry. They start a business up and they don't have that type of support, or, you know, literally they're single and they're just out there just managing and just doing whatever, just whatever it takes to get it. You know, so no, I understand where you're coming from. Yeah, you don't have anybody by your side. It does make it 10 times. It does make it rough. Yeah.
I got a question. Let me do. I got to do a quick station identification again. Again, this is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marsh University. This is Brother to Brother. Again, we are Coast to Coast, Brother to Brother, with Dr. Keelan Hinton, Dr. Nate Chapman. And again, we are here with our special guest, Mr. Will Chapman. He's an entrepreneur, and we're talking a little bit about goals, goal settings, identity, and entrepreneurship today. Okay. My question for you is this. I heard a guy talking about investing once, and he said people will invest. No one wants to invest in your dreams. He said a guy will invest in somebody who comes to him with a coin laundry before he invests in someone's dream. A lot of times when we have dreams, we tend to look at them in an unrealistic manner. But he said, if somebody comes to me with a coin laundry, they came to me because they know they're not emotionally attached to it. They mentally know it's going to draw a profit. So it's one thing when people have dreams, you know, the question is your dream realistic? And is it something that everybody else care about? And two, you know, something like a coin laundry, knowing that it's going to bring an investment is what really matters. So my question to you is, was that something that you thought about? Like, was that something you thought about when you started your business? Was, you know, maybe I like it, and not so much I like it, you know, I'm good at this, but most importantly, I know this is going to make money. And like, what are some of the, like, what would you advise people to think about when they start a business? But what did you think about? Like, what was important to you was, I know I'm gonna make money doing this. This ain't like, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, so, yeah, so what you're saying, I get what you're saying. So, yeah, there was a time when, you know, I was just like, I did start thinking, like, you know, man, I want to do something. And of course, my mindset was something was more so like, look, I want to create something that's going to get me going and get me by for the, you know, right now. And then later on in the future, I want to start getting into other things too as well. So, yeah. So that was my mindset. And as far as getting people to understand what other people's dreams are and stuff like that, I kind of think that like, if you have a plan, then I think your plan, and it's realistic, it's got to be realistic goals and realistic outcomes, because like you said, people are not going to invest in people's dreams. Like I think like a dream is like, you know, you can go to sleep and then you can wake up the next morning and you kind of forget about your dream, or you might remember like the first 5 minutes after you wake up, but then once the day starts, you kind of forget about it and go on about your day. Well, that's kind of like how dreams are, you know, and people are not going to really invest in it, you know what I mean? And it kind of correlates with that, but I mean, people are not going to invest into that. But if you have a business plan and you have something that's structured and you have something that's, you know, and it could still be your dream, it's just you're putting it on paper and you're actually coming up with realistic goals to achieve what you want to achieve at the end, whatever. So my situation, I didn't have any capital like that to really. So I was just saving every little bit of check I can. I put a little bit of money aside, so I didn't have to ask anybody to invest or do anything like that. So I don't know if I answered all the questions, but
you did. I think that's important. Go ahead.
Let me add something about it because I was able to see some of the process. I think that the viewers would appreciate. I remember when you developed this idea before you actually had walked away from the job. I don't know if it was before you did it 2 weeks or not, but I think it goes to this idea of a plan versus a dream. You developed a plan. Like you started, okay, this is from what I remember. The cutting season starts in May or March or whatever month it is. You know, Michigan, probably May. Okay, so it starts in May. I'll be ready for the cutting season. I remember you talking to me about when the cutting season was going to be and planning out when you need to get your equipment. Okay, I know I need these type of lawnmowers. I need the one that you can ride on. I need this probably. I'm going to start out with one. And then I remember you starting to think about all the other things that I need, a blower. So those are just examples of how strategic you were being about your plans. And then I've seen it growing over the years, you talked about how you're going to get these contracts with different places and what that would look like. And that, I think that is, to Dr. Hinton's point, one of the big difference between a dreamer and a doer is a solid plan. I mean, it's also the significant difference between somebody successful and somebody's not. The question that I wonder about, because I know we're both, you know, cut from the same cloth in terms of entrepreneurial mindset. And I know there's lots of entrepreneurs probably listening that, I'll give you an example. I went to a business networking thing in 2016 or something like that. And I'll never forget, because I went to the table and this man was very motivated. Like he had came to his table. He had some stuff he was doing with cell phones. He had some stuff he was doing with t-shirts. He had some stuff he was doing with some lawyer stuff, and like he could also do video, and like he had seven businesses on his table. I was like, yeah, man, what you need, I got it. I'm like, I'm thinking, man, dude is all over the place. Like he got a good entrepreneurial spirit, but like, you know, he's separated all over the place. And I think what he had was the entrepreneurial spirit and the dream of being an entrepreneur, but he didn't have a real plan on how he's going to do it. So how did you, because I know you've had other goals and aspirations, and I know you have aspirations beyond this business. How did you get yourself to just focus on this?
So, like I said, I did a lot of studying. I could tell you right now. I went to Google University, YouTube University, and I went on there and I just literally just found other sites of other people doing the same thing that was related to what I was doing. So I looked up other alarm companies. I was seeing how they were starting off. I even went to like online forums just to see, you know, how people started off. And gradually I knew that like, okay, I need to have this type of equipment. And I didn't have a lot of the money to get everything. So I was like, let me just start off here. And the first decision I made was, let me just get myself out there, you know, just get myself out there, just let people know who I am. And that's what I did. I went out there, hey, you know, and I didn't want any, and at the time I didn't even want any money really. I was like, let me just go out here and let me just, and see if I can cut people grass. And if they liked it, then okay, let me do it a couple more times and then let them know, like, hey, I'm starting a business. I did let them know, and then I eventually get in my first couple of clients, and then I was like, okay, cool. And then as time went on, before I put my 2 weeks in, I definitely started putting money up and thinking about different things that I could buy at the moment for what I can afford. But as each year went by, of course, I was making more money. And the money I was making, I just reinvested all back into the company, and which led me getting bigger contracts, which led me getting better customers, better clients. And then once I did do that, I did end up getting on Google for advertising and everything. And that right there was really what took my company to the next level. So I got great reviews on there. So that really helps. So
can you give the listeners just an idea? I mean, you don't have to tell all your business, but like about how many clients did you have last season compared to your first season?
So right now I'm going into year four right now. So when I first started off, literally I only had like maybe, I want to say like maybe 10 clients. And I was using a little push mower at the time too. So it was rough, but I did it, you know. And then a year after that, year two, I kind of, I went and got a zero turn. It was like the cheapest one I could find, got a zero turn. And then those 20 clients ended up turning into like, I want to say 50. And then that was when I put my 2 weeks in. Once I had 50, that was about, I was like, okay, full time, let's go. And then, of course, I wasn't working 9 to 5 then, so I just delegated those hours into the company, and I had more time to do stuff. So I think we'll say year three, I ended up jumping from 50 to 150. And then here it is now, going into this year, I'll probably be somewhere between like 200 to 300.
Okay. Hey, everybody there listening, we're going to take a quick 30-second break, quick 60-second break again. This is Brother to Brother, Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Henson, with our special guest, Mr. Will Chapman. Again, talking about identity, talking about goal setting, and talking about entrepreneurship. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in 2 seconds.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, we are back. We are back again. This is WMUL 88.1 FM on your FM dial. Again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Henson, and our special guest, Mr. Will Chapman. Again, talking about goal setting, identity, goal setting, and entrepreneurship. And we got about 10 minutes left on the clock. So again, as before we start, for those who may just be joining us, he's telling us a little bit about his journey, and some of the ups and downs and some of the struggles and everything that it takes to start a business, the courage that it takes to leave stability and to step out, to have faith and believe in your vision, and all that it takes, particularly goal setting, having a business plan, and everything that it takes to step out on your own, to step out on faith and try to start your own business, okay? So again, as we're getting ready to wrap it up, something that I really admire, that I think is so, so very important, is earlier you talked about having a t-shirt company or having a small business that was doing well and then for whatever reason folded. No pun intended, but folded or something happened. And what's impressive is even though that folded, you kept moving forward. Like failure, and I think that's a larger part of why some people don't. You alluded to that earlier. You know, this notion, the idea of, we talked about fear, and like some people are just afraid. Some people are afraid to try, or afraid to jump out on faith. You know, this thing that I love to hear Steve Harvey talk about is the difference between anybody that's successful and people who aren't is that successful people just jump. That at some point or another, you just got to decide to jump off this mountain. You got to decide to just make that leap and jump and just have faith that, you know, whatever parachute you got is going to open up eventually. You know, on the way down, you might hit a couple rocks. You got to be some bumps and bruises. You might start a business. It might not make it, but you stay committed to the journey. And that's the one thing that I admire the most is throughout all of this, no matter how rough it got, you even started and had other little businesses and other little things that you were working on before, irrespective of what happened with those, you just kept moving. You kept pushing forward. You kept trying to find, what is my niche? What is the thing? What is something that's needed? And what's my niche that I can be really good at? What's a skill that I can do? And I think that for whatever reason, I don't know, and maybe Nate can probably speak to that more than anybody else, because he does, that's like sort of what he does is performance stuff. Nate, can that be taught? Like, they're just, you know, it's interesting. You use the phrase, we're cut from the same cloth. Like both of you, it's amazing how you both talk and think and speak the same way. Like, in regards to entrepreneurship and starting your own and, like, not giving up. I can hear it in both of your speak, you know, but there just seems to be some people who are just born that way, who just cut from their cloth.
Yeah, so I would say that's the old debate, you know. It's just like the leadership debate that goes on: is a person born this way, or these characters they develop? I will tell you, they're developed. That they would develop those things, and if you want to develop them, come see me. I'll help you out. But in general,
always making a dollar. Go ahead, my man.
I think, but in general, if you think about it, even ours as brothers, it's more to me, it's more of the environmental factor, because, you know, even though my dad has his job, he's very entrepreneurial minded. And I think some of these things are just taught. Like some of these things are just like things that are kind of stewed in the Chapman household, so to speak. I think there are elements, and if you can break down the elements that have to exist, like the basic acronym I work on is this idea of how to be a big dog. And I get that acronym because when people talk about people being fighters or competitive, anything, they say, you know, this person didn't do it because they don't have enough dog in them. So in order for you to really be the best at what you do, you got to be a big dog. I change the letters sometimes, but overall, that the B is sort of this idea of being bold or brave. That's going to be necessary for you to get to the next level. The I is for you to be innovative or imaginative. You're going to have to be able to work within limits or come with new solutions within limits to get to the next level. The G, I really have no other way to say it except for being grandiose. I mean, you got to believe in yourself at a larger level than most people in order to get past things. I think we mentioned that last week. And then the D is you got to be definitive about your plan and or purpose. The O is you got to be obsessed with this thing to really make it work. And then that G is you need to be a part of some type of group, a mastermind type of situation. So those would be the attributes that I think can be developed.
Okay. Yeah, we got about 5 minutes left. Will, if there was any advice you could give people on any level about entrepreneurship, starting their own business, not being afraid, If there are a couple of things it don't have to be a lot, but if there's just a couple of things you could tell people, what would you tell them about stepping out on their own and being their own boss, writing their own checks, setting their own schedule? What would you tell them?
Oh, wow. I would tell you keeping things simple. making it simple. Sometimes, you know, we can play victim to ourselves, but we end up doing, we overthink things, you know? And then we try to go out and do things. And sometimes just our mind, sometimes you can be a prisoner of your own mindset. Like sometimes it's you want to come up with something, you want to start an adventure or whatever, or to do something. Sometimes we might get all the way day to the point where we're like, oh yeah, yeah, we're going to start this day. And then all of a sudden that day comes and you're like, and then you start second guessing yourself, or you start having naysayers, or you start hearing them. Sometimes, you know, you got to like literally tune that stuff out and just have a mindset and just say, you know what, regardless of whatever happens, at least I try. And if I fail, sometimes failure is good. Some people don't look at failure as a failure, like it's just a bad thing in our society. We look at failures that way. But sometimes if you take a magnifying glass and you look deep enough, you're going to find a solution from that failure. So you might pick your feet up and you'd be like, you know what, it didn't work this way. Well, I'm going to try to work it this way. And then just go back at it again. And it goes back to what you were saying as far as having traits with your family or just your peers or your surroundings. I think a lot of people in the world, you know, they've been around a lot of people, their families, whatever, and some people have it in them. Some people stumble upon it, you know. So my advice for everybody out there, just make things simple. Come up with a business plan. Make it simple. Figure out what you're good at. And some things, you know, you might not even be good at it, but if you take the time out and study it, be persistent with it, you'll succeed.
Good stuff. Well, we want you to know, we appreciate you taking the time, energy, effort. You could have been doing a whole lot of stuff, but you decided to take time out to share your experience. And I appreciate it. And I know anyone listening appreciates it as well. So I just want you to know I definitely appreciate you. And it's inspiring. It's inspiring to see brothers go out and not take no for an answer and have a vision and, you know, have this perspective and this mindset that, you know, while it may be hard work, there is freedom in that hard work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I always tell people that that's when you're truly free, when you can set your own schedule and you sign in your own checks. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is freedom in that, but it's going to, you know, obviously it costs something. Like you talked about how much time that it took. You was working a job and doing stuff on the weekend. There are sacrifices, but you just got to remember that at some point, this is all going to pay off if I just keep grinding. So I appreciate you, my brother. I appreciate you. It's inspiring. Definitely.
Thank you.
Again, we'll be back next Wednesday, always from 9 to 10. We thank everyone for joining. Again, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com, b2bpsych, b2bpsych@gmail.com. And as we always wrap up, as I always say, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. All the things I should have done, I could have done, I would have done, all the people I wish I would have loved. So while you're here, make sure you die empty. Don't take nothing to the grave. Do all the things you want to do. Love as hard as you can the people that you want to love, okay? And make sure that you're doing something that sets your soul on fire, as we always say. So peace and blessings to you. And I'll throw it to Dr. Chapman, Mr. Will Chapman and Dr. Chapman. If they have any parting shots, they'll give them now.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Will, for coming on. We appreciate it. It's always good to kick it. I want to say to the viewers, we want to give you an opportunity to listen to a fellow entrepreneur, or if you're considering being an entrepreneur, everybody has to start from somewhere. Everybody's got a different skill set. Everybody's got a different dream. And it's important, if you really want your dream to succeed, that you come up with a plan. I don't know if we were aware of it. I know here in California, everybody probably was that, yesterday was the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. And so I wanted to give a couple of his quotes that would be pertinent to what we were talking about. He once said, "I don't want to be the next Michael Jordan. I only want to be Kobe Bryant." I think if we stop focusing on the other person or whoever the other people are, you can use them as a model, but at the end of the day, we were all created with our own individual gifts. even if you're not going to use them to be an entrepreneur, if you're just going to use them to spread your gift to the world and whatever job you do, I think you'll be better at it if you stop trying to be that other person and figure out how to be a better you. The last thing I would say is he's talking about winning. He's, the basic essentials parts of his quote is people don't understand just how obsessed he was with winning. I remember last year, which reminds me, we've been on at least a year, because I remember talking about this last year. So we've been on at least a year, man. That's awesome. But the other thing is, he talked when he was alive, he watched video a lot. He was always looking back. He was obsessed with the idea of winning. And I think if you really want to accomplish anything, you got to be obsessed with it. Obsession may not be a word that you want to hear, but anybody who's really going to accomplish something has to have it fixed on their mind, and they have to be like a dog to a bone. So find your bone so you can get fixed on it. We'll see you next week.